Good morning. You're listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. Coming up in the Book Nook this morning, we'll be talking to Professor Neil Carpathios. He is a professor at Shawnee State University in Portsmouth and the editor of a new collection called Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. This is a collection of wonderful poetry and prose. And there's an event coming up in Dayton to celebrate the release of this collection, and we'll be telling you all about it and hearing some pieces from this book coming up in the Book Nook following NPR News. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Neil Carpathios. He has just edited a collection called Every River on Earth. He joins us by telephone from Portsmouth, Ohio. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I just assumed you were in Portsmouth.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
I am in Portsmouth, Ohio.
All righty. You are a professor at Shawnee State University, which I understand is the newest state university in Ohio.
Yes, it was established as a university in 1986, and prior to that it was a community college. But I'm relatively new, I suppose you could say. This is my seventh year at Shawnee State.
And you teach creative writing.
Right, that's my main area. Of course, I do teach some of the other writing and a couple of literature classes, but mainly creative writing, yes.
And you've put together quite a stack of creative writing in this collection, Every River on Earth. Tell us how this came about.
Well, like I said, this is my seventh year here. And when I first came from Northern Ohio, where I grew up, Canton, Akron area, I really didn't know what to expect, and I started to notice that there were certain elements of life here that were a little bit different in Southern Ohio, in Appalachian Ohio. And the more I was here, I became even more intrigued by it. Of course, my students, many of them were from this area, so I kind of, you know, digested some of their traits and their backgrounds and became very curious and intrigued by different aspects of life down here. And as I mentioned in the introduction to the book, the way that I gain the most useful information for me about a subject personally is not so much through history books, but through creative writing. And when I read poetry and fiction and essays, I think that sometimes you can get a deeper sense of a place and people than just mere surface facts. And so really that was the beginning. I had the idea, I thought I would really, out of just my own curiosity for the place to learn, send out a call for submissions throughout the country for writing that had to do somehow with Southern Ohio. And I was really pleasantly surprised. I received over 400 submissions, and that was the beginning.
In your introduction, you define what it means, what Appalachia is. Some of our listeners probably don't know. What is Appalachia?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really know too much about it myself, other than just the vague things I had heard about or seen on television about country life, hillbilly life, you know, some of those stereotypes, which are really not that accurate for the most part. But I did a little research also as part of the introduction, and Appalachia is a really large area that I wasn't aware of, from like southern New York to northern Mississippi, a whole stretch of territory, and West Virginia, the entire state, is considered the only state that is entirely Appalachian, and then parts of 12 other states. So it's a large area. And southeastern Ohio is part of that.
Pretty much the southern third, isn't it, of Ohio?
Right.
Give or take a few counties?
Yes. Yep. That would be it.
And, of course, Athens, Ohio is very much a part of that region. And this book was published by OU Press in Athens.
Right. Indeed. Yes, they have an excellent division in their press, which is devoted to Appalachian studies. And so this book nicely fit into that category. But, yeah, they have a very strong program there and an excellent press. And they have a natural interest, you know, in Appalachian literature.
Neil Carpathios joins us. He's the editor of Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. Tell us how you set up the book and how you decided what to include.
Well, initially, I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't have any preconceived notions of what I'd get. My main criteria was really mostly just quality writing. I did want a little bit of variety. I was hoping that the writing would be more accessible to a general readership, not necessarily overly scholarly or difficult. But other than that, I wasn't sure what I would get. And after receiving all the submissions and going through them, I started to see that there were certain subject areas that kept recurring. And so in the end, the book is divided into four sections. The first one is called Family and Folks, which is about family relationships and the people. The second section is called The Land, which is a very important aspect of life down here, I've learned, which is the natural world. The third section is called The Grind, which deals with some of the grittier, darker aspects, drug problems, crime, that this area has struggled with. And then the last section is called Home and Away, and that section is made up, it's the largest section, it's made up of pieces that seem to have an interest in looking back at this area after having moved away, or some of the writers who have passed through and lived here briefly, more of an idea of displacement as well as what home really means to the writers.
This collection has a foreword written by Donald Ray Pollack, who is one of my favorite writers anywhere in America, not just in Appalachia. He's out of Chillicothe, and you have one of his short stories in the section, appropriately for Don, The Grind. And I love this story. I had never read this before.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a wonderful, he's an amazing writer, as you mentioned. And a very fine person. And he was kind enough to not only give us the foreword, but that story. And if I recall, when he gave the story to me, he mentioned that it didn't quite make it into his collection, Knock 'em Stiff.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of a very good story, but it just didn't fit somehow in the structure of the book. And so it was sort of a leftover story. And you know, it's hard to believe it could be a leftover because it is so powerful.
The theme of it actually reminded me a little bit of his novel with the religious overtones.
Right. And in a dark sort of way.
Uh-huh.
The way he interweaves this element of infidelity between a husband and wife and the death of their son. With some of the religious overtones. I mean, he's just a master at creating kind of a painful yet graceful, you know, scenario.
There's quite a bit of poetry in this collection, and I understand that you know something about poetry. Tell us about your poetic endeavors.
Well, it's by far, although I do write some other, you know, other genres a little bit and publish some, I'm mainly by far a poet. I went to the University of Iowa and studied there years ago in the late 80s, received my MFA, and really from there worked at it, continue to work at it, publish as much as I can as it comes along. Was lucky to study and know some, you know, fine poets, and I'm very lucky to have some connections that are new that I've made with some of the contributors in this book. Some I was a little bit familiar with, some I've corresponded with more and more, and that was kind of an unexpected gift and bonus of editing this book.
The book is Every River on Earth, Writing from Appalachian, Ohio. Neil Carpathios is the editor. And the foreword was written by one of my favorite writers, Donald Ray Pollack. And I would like to share the foreword with listeners because I think this says so much about this part of Ohio and about Don Pollack. He writes, "I was raised in Knockemstiff in southern Ohio and have never lived more than a few miles from that holler my entire life. As a teenager, I spent a major portion of my time fantasizing about being someone else somewhere else. I was unhappy for various reasons and wanted desperately to leave this place. After dropping out of high school, I hired on at the paper mill in Chillicothe, where my father and grandfather worked. I had many reservations about doing that, but I was broke and told myself I'd work there just long enough to save some money, then move on to some other state, maybe Florida or California or New York, anywhere but here in the sticks. However, that never happened. After I started working at the factory, my life quickly became complicated and messy, and I married a couple of times and lived from paycheck to paycheck. When I wasn't punching the clock, I was either drinking in a bar or driving around the hills getting high in whatever old junker I could afford. I saw a lot of things during those years that would later influence my fiction, but at the time, I was just trying to survive one more day without getting fired or hurting myself. Like most drunks, I needed something to blame all my troubles on. I often blame Southern Ohio. If I could just get away from here, I thought, everything would be better. Though things often don't turn out the way you think they will, I now like to believe they usually turn out the way they're supposed to, if you hang in there long enough. In my case, I ended up in alcohol and drug rehab in Portsmouth down by the Ohio River. After my head cleared up a little, I started to see that all my problems were of my own making, that blaming the place where I was born or other people for my troubles was ridiculous, to say the least. I stayed sober and slowly began to carve out a new life for myself. And a few years later, I decided to try to learn how to write. For a long time, I filled my stories with doctors and lawyers and professors, people I knew nothing about, in places like Boston and Los Angeles, mainly because I didn't think anyone would be interested in reading about the rural Midwest and its inhabitants. Everything I wrote fell flat and lifeless on the page until I finally began to set my fiction in southern Ohio. As I kept writing about it, I began to see the place in a new light, which is, I think, one of the chief things that art is supposed to do. True, there is a lot of ugliness and despair and heartbreak in these hills, but there is also much goodness and mystery and beauty. The stunning poetry and prose chosen by Neil Carpathios for this anthology is ample proof of that. Now that I've published a couple of books, people ask me from time to time if I'll ever leave Southern Ohio. I suppose many of them figure, as I once did, that a writer would be better off in a big city or a picturesque village in New England or a secluded cabin in the Rockies. But I mean it with all my heart when I say, no, I can't think of anywhere I'd rather live. Some of them understand and some don't, and of course, a few years ago that answer would have certainly surprised me. Not anymore, though. Last week I was at a gas station near my house buying a cup of coffee when I heard a store clerk practically begging a customer, an old, befuddled-looking man wearing dirty tennis shoes and clutching a $10 bill, not to spend any more money on lottery tickets. There's a story there, and I hope to hell I can write it someday. Donald Ray Pollock with the foreword to the collection, Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. We'll be right back with Neil Carpathios right after this. Neil Carpathios joins us today in the Book Nook. He is a professor at Shawnee State University in Portsmouth and the editor of Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. Let's talk about some of the pieces that you chose. I know it's hard to choose which one to talk about, but let's just go for it. Let's talk about some of these.
Would you like just some examples? Or?
Sure.
Well, there are so many. I guess I could go quickly section by section and tell you some of my pieces that I think really represent each section, if that's all right.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay, well, the first section, which is Family and Folks, there's a wonderful poem by Beverly Zimer. It's called Enough to Go Around, and it's a poem in which she describes their father. They didn't have much money, and they really kind of scrapped for food. But it's a really touching poem of how their father brought in a rabbit from hunting and how they all shared one rabbit around the table. And it's kind of a very touching home story. There's a hilarious, it's a pretty funny poem that a lot of the contributors I've heard from, it's one of their favorites. It's by Janet Ladretch. It's called The Farmer's Wife's Vacation.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I really like that one.
It's a short one.
Uh-huh.
Would you like me to read it?
Sure.
Okay, The Farmer's Wife's Vacation by Janet Ladretch. Says Ruby to Earlene, me and the old man took our vacation yesterday. Oh, yeah? She says. What did you do? Well, after he fed calves and milked the cows and kind of looked everything over, he come on back to bed. You're kidding. No, I ain't. Then we had us a little Vodio dough, and then we went out to breakfast. I had me some of that French toast with berries. Was it good? Yep, we're going again next year. So that's kind of a sweet little piece. And
that is sweet.
A little bit of humor. And there's humor in the book. There's... like I said, some darker themed pieces. A really nice variety came about. In the second section called The Land, the title of the anthology comes from a poem by David Lee Garrison, which is called Every River on Earth. And in that piece, he describes looking at a fairly ordinary a moment in southern Ohio, which is just looking at nature, and suddenly he sees every river on earth as if he suddenly sees a universal trait, in what's right in front of him. And that's a beautiful piece and one that the book gains its title from.
Mm.
The third section is called The Grind, and there's a piece by Laura Madeline Wiseman, which is very nice. She's in line for the cashier. That's the title of the poem. And she notices a man who has a cart full of cat food.
Uh-huh.
And he's shabbily dressed, and obviously he's poor. And she describes, this experience, something that, you can see down in southern Ohio almost anywhere.
That's a powerful one.
Yes, yes, it is.
The man is obviously starving to death.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, so poverty comes up. Of course, in The Grind also, there's the piece by Donald Ray Pollock.
I wish we could read that one on the radio, but I don't think so.
Yeah, it might be a little bit too long.
I think some of the language might not exactly work on the
radio.
That
too.
Yeah.
But to remove the language would really rob it of its reality, I think.
True.
Yeah. In the last section, a couple pieces that are really nice, Home and Away. There's the opening piece in the section by Kathy Lentis. It's called To the Young Man Living on the 14th Floor, Missing the Hills of Appalachia. And she actually wrote that for her son, who was living in Cleveland at the time and couldn't quite adjust to being away from his home in Appalachia in southern Ohio. And it's a beautiful poem telling him to never forget that it's always here for him to return to. There's a clever piece by Adam Saul called Portrait of Southern Ohio in Five-Syllable Road Signs.
Mm-hmm. I love that poem. Do you want to read that one?
Sure.
Okay.
It's sort of a found poem where he just lists road signs that, you know, I think most people are familiar with down here. Wood chipper for rent. Danger, rocks below. Registered Holsteins. Adopt a highway. President Harding's birthplace. Progressive euchre. Troubled? Try praying. Soccer conference champs. Long live rock and roll. Ceramic lawn pets. New development. Re-elect John Glenn. The county's best yarn. Slippery when wet. Sarah, we miss you. Hardy mums for sale. Private property. Forget the damn dog. Beware of owner. Electric co-op. Next stop, Defiance. Walmart coming soon. And I don't really know. I haven't done an extensive ethnographic study of any kind, but I have noticed I think there are more signs down here than what I'm familiar with in other places.
Or maybe you're just paying more attention.
That could be too. But so anyway, like I said, I think every section has some surprises. And of course, I haven't read any of the prose pieces, which are wonderful, but a little bit lengthy.
Mm.
So there are short stories, essays, as well as the poetry.
In case you've just tuned in, our guest today in the Book Nook is Neil Karpathios. He's the editor of a new collection, Every River on Earth, Writing from Appalachian Ohio. I think we need to mention that you have an event coming up in Dayton at the Dayton Metro Library, 215 East 3rd Street, on Sunday, April 19th at 2 o'clock. There'll be a reading from this collection, and I'm guessing that you're expecting a number of your contributors to be there. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I think there'll be many of them, which will be just a real treat. They will be reading from the book their pieces, and books will be available there also for purchase. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Again, that's at the Dayton Metro Library, the main branch, 215 East 3rd Street in Dayton on Sunday, April 19th from 2 until 3 o'clock. Of course, it's an open-to-the-public free event, and I believe that's going to be in the main library auditorium from what I've been told. And if you want information about it, the number is 463-2665. That's 463-2665, Sunday, April 19th, 2 o'clock, Every River on Earth, Writing from Appalachian, Ohio. I assume you're going to be there, Neil.
Oh, nothing would stop me. I can't wait. I really can't wait. I can't wait to meet some of the contributors that I don't know.
So,
and, you know, to hear them read in their own voices.
Were the submissions via email, or did they send them through snail mail? How did they do it?
There was some of both, but I would say primarily through email. Yeah.
I understand you have a contributor who lives sort of a primitive life, no electricity, no phone, no whatever. I imagine he mailed it in.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually, that was a little simpler. But that's Brian Richards.
Uh-huh.
He's an excellent longtime poet in this area. I actually refer to him as the poet laureate of Portsmouth.
Oh.
But he doesn't really have that official title. But, yeah, he lives in a cabin that he built, and it's in the middle of the Shawnee Forest. And he lives this primitive life, and he has some pieces in there that are very interesting and that possess his own distinctive style.
I love poetry. That poem, Chipmunk, A Peripheral Imposition.
Right.
That is beautiful. So you must know him. He's a neighbor.
Not a neighbor. I don't quite live out that far in the woods, but I see him. He's on campus here at the university, and, you know, we see each other from time to time. I also host a monthly open mic event at a local place called Port City Cafe and Pub, and he's one of the regulars, so he's always there reciting his poetry.
Don't you also do some radio?
You know, I did for my first few years here. It was a fairly regular thing where I would just do a short half-hour segment about writing. But then that kind of became a little too much for me with other things that I have, other commitments. I do still, though, write a weekly newspaper column, which is in the Portsmouth Daily Times. It's called Let's Talk Poetry. And that's something that continues, and it's very successful. I love to showcase writers mainly from this area, but I've received even some submissions from you know, even outside of the country. I don't know how they find out online about it. But anything I can do to kind of generate interest around here, and that's another thing that this book, I think, really I'm proud of, is that when I came down here from northern Ohio, I realized that it can be a little bit isolating, this area, for a writer. And so that was another natural inclination to try to gather together some fellow writers within the covers of a book to show the world that, you know, there's a lot going on down here, a lot of talented people.
We have a gentleman here at WYSO who has been a longtime contributor, and he's an emeritus professor from Wittenberg, who is just passionate about poetry and has kept it going on the station for many years. His name's Conrad Balliot, and it sounds like you two are kindred spirits from the sound of it. What is it, the role of poetry in our culture these days? Do you have any thoughts on poetry? It's kind of hard to make a living writing poetry, isn't it, unless you're Billy Collins?
Oh, yeah. We're poets are the monks of the literary world. We take a vow of poverty. But, you know, it's always been a major art for a more of a minor audience. It doesn't seem to, throughout history, be quite as popular or best-selling as some other genres. But, you know, if you look at cultures from the beginning of time, you know, cultures had people who chanted, who told stories, who recited orally lyrics, you know, and I think it's a real important way of reminding the world that, you know, the heart and the soul matter, and sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that in today's corporate business atmosphere and fast-paced life. So poems sometimes are a way of saying slow down. You can take a look at me, take a look at myself, the poem, and there might be something here, you know, of importance to remind us of who we are. So, yeah, I couldn't live without poetry. I think my life is at the mercy of poetry.
Mm.
So maybe I am a kindred spirit of
Conrad.
Conrad, yeah, I'll have to meet him.
Well, he might turn up at this event. I can't predict that, but our guest today is Neil Carpathios. He's the editor of Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. I was pleased to see that you have several contributors here who have been on this program, not just Donald Ray Pollock, but also Ed Davis, who is a poet and a novelist, and someone who I think is probably one of the great poetic souls of Dayton, Ohio, Herbert Woodward Martin.
Oh, yes. He's wonderful. He actually, before I came to Shawnee State, he spent, I believe, a semester here as a visiting professor, and I still hear about it. He seems to be the type of person that leaves his mark and touches people wherever he goes. And I know that he's well known for performing the works of Paul Laurence Dunbar, which I have never seen, I'm sorry to say. But, yeah, he has a piece in the book, which is about one of Portsmouth's most famous citizens, the opera singer Kathleen Battle. And I think Herbert is planning to be there at the event in Dayton, and He always signs his correspondence, whether it's email or written, he says, a handshake and thought.
That's him.
And so I'll actually get to really shake his hand, which I'm looking forward to.
Well, if you ever want to hear him read Dunbar, we have an archive of programs on our station website at wyso.org. If you just search for Herbert Woodward Martin, WYSO, you can hear him read Dunbar. He's got a couple of interviews on there. So,
definitely. I will. I just jotted that down.
It's quite an experience to hear him do Dunbar.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
He really gets into it. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and our guest today is Neil Carpathios. He is the editor of Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. We're running out of time here. Do you have any other things to say about the collection?
Well, I'll just finally say that I'm just thrilled about it. I'm proud of it. I'm honored by the writers that submitted and are in the book. It wouldn't be anything without them. They're the stars. I kind of was the ringleader, but I think the book offers any reader a pleasurable experience and a real glimpse into this area of Appalachia. And it's done, I think, in a very artistic and seamless way. Instead of sitting down and consciously reading a textbook, a reader can really get a feel for the people and the place through these poems, stories, and essays. So I hope people might consider checking it out.
It ranges from flights of fancy to gritty reality.
It does.
I have never been to Portsmouth, but we get the impression just from the book that Portsmouth is an area where they've had their share of troubles. We've got sort of a drug epidemic in some of these rural areas, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And when I moved down here, that was one of the first things that became very clear to me. And in the introduction, I mentioned that, side by side with that is this amazing natural beauty that is just breathtaking. The hills and the Ohio River, something I wasn't really used to. So you have, I think, this paradoxical dichotomy of elements that make this area interesting. It's beautiful. It's scarred. The people are simple yet complicated in certain ways, and I think that the book really offers some light on all of that.
Well, when you referred to pill mills, that kind of was a shocker to me. I had no clue. Portsmouth, didn't that used to be the location for an early professional football franchise?
You know, I think so, and I think Jim Thorpe, the great Hall of Famer, I think he played. Yeah.
We had a guy on the program years ago who wrote a book about all those early teams, and there were a number of them in this region. It's kind of surprising to learn that.
Yeah, and I've learned that an unusually large number of pro baseball players have come from here.
From Portsmouth.
Yeah, and Branch Rickey, of course. You know, they had made a movie about how he, brought in Jackie Robinson and Al Oliver, the Pittsburgh Pirates' great player. And I guess there are others, too. And so I don't know. That's kind of an interesting fact.
So Branch Rickey was from Portsmouth?
Branch Rickey, I believe, was from the Portsmouth area. I'm not sure if he was actually from the city itself. But
I think he went to Ohio Wesleyan, if I remember.
Yes, but I don't know if you're familiar with the murals that we have on the flood wall down here.
I read something about it in your collection.
Oh, they're beautiful. And, on some of those murals, they depict some of these famous citizens, and there's one with Branch Rickey. But the murals span about a mile across, and they tell the history of Portsmouth through these giant visual artistic representations in chronological order. So there's a lot of history here. It's a beautiful and interesting place, really.
And being from northern Ohio and relocating here, you're learning as you go.
Oh, I'm learning every day. I wouldn't ever claim to just because I edited a book to be this expert about this area. If anything, I know less than most people because, you know, I'm fairly new. But it's fun. It's fun, and I call it home now.
Well, I better let listeners know one more time about this event, kind of the rollout, I'd say, for the book in our area. It's Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. We've been talking to Neil Karpathios, who edited the collection and put it together. And a number of the contributors are going to be present for an event reading from their contributions to this collection on Sunday, April 19th at 2 o'clock. And that's at the Dayton Metro Library, the main branch, 215 East 3rd Street, in the main library auditorium in Dayton, Ohio. And for information, the number is 463-2665. That's Sunday, April 19th at 2 o'clock. And, of course, it's open to the public. So I imagine you're going to get a pretty good turnout down there, Neil.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I appreciate it.
We really appreciate your time today.
Well, I'm grateful for your interest in you taking the time to talk to me.
It's been our pleasure. It was really a pleasure talking to Neil Karpathios about this new collection, Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. And during that interview, he read a poem by Rebecca Latchman, who teaches and tutors writing at Ohio University. And she has a statement that she puts in her bio in this book. It says, "I only discovered the unadulterated version of Athens, Ohio, after marrying an Athenian after graduate school. Having lived here for nearly a decade, I am constantly amazed by the area's identity, historical clout, and overall chutzpah." Her poem, "Tourist Brochure for Athens, Ohio," personifies the Appalachian foothills, party school, ghost hunting hotspot, locavore city, as a speaker. And I would like to share this poem with you this morning in the Book Nook. "Tourist Brochure for Athens, Ohio," by Rebecca J.R. Latchman. "Round here, breaded chicken hearts will cost you $2.50 a box. Round here, upright pianos can end up on the porch, too expensive to tune, too bulky of an animal. Round here, a squirrel could once tree itself in Parkersburg, end up in Indiana, never touch the ground. Round here, the pawpaw goes into homebrew, ice cream, salsas, even has its own fall festival. Round here, there's no train out, not anymore. Bus leaves for Cincinnati or Columbus. Round here, the college lawns get unrivaled attention. No water or electric, just 10 minutes down the road. Some folks play settlers, live that way on purpose. Most? Oh, hell, no way. Round here, we shine old mining towns into series of delis and meditation rooms. The last brick beehive kiln just got its first real crack. Round here, new student condos went up on Shawnee burial grounds. Front porches wear sloppy necklaces made of red party cups. Round here, we got 270 cemeteries. Some of them move. Just ask anybody up there on Peach Ridge Road. Round here, ghost hunters stare right back at the crying angel statue or the face of the devil on a door in Wilson Hall. Spectral mist? We got it. Ghost herd of bison? A big draw. Round here, the old asylum closed some 20 years back, and yet there's movement behind barred windows. We find a bit of lace out on the lawn. Round here, you'd be committed for irregular bleeding, post-traumatic fits, excessive childbirth, struck by lightning even, in you'd go. Round here, still meet the patients who came on down the hill when all that funding went wonky in the 80s. Round here, our children got two choices mostly, get out or get in uniform. Creeks slip down the mountains, orange ribbons full of acid. We already know that story. Little cities of black diamonds. We're working on a newer title. Yep, we're working pretty hard. Around here, we pronounce Appalachia any way we damn well please. Rebecca J.R. Latchman with her poem, Tourist Brochure for Athens, Ohio. And that's from the collection Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. And there's a lot of stuff in here that I like, but there's another one I'd like to share with you this morning. It's a poem by a Daytonian, David Lee Garrison. It's called Route 4. Take it from Dayton through corn and soybeans to Lake Erie. Eat maple nut ice cream from Woody's and watch the barns drift by. Wave to the people lolling in porch swings, and they'll wave back. Take your time. Stop for live bait and fish Honey Creek. Have dinner at Bubbles Burgers, then see a play at the Attica Little Theater. Ask for directions at a gas station, and three bystanders will help the attendant tell you the way to Milford Center, Marion, Bucyrus, Chatfield, or Reedtown. They'll all wish you a safe trip, and someone will say, hurry back now. The best place to stay is the Stay Inn, and the best breakfast is at the Hen House, where you'll want to take a biscuit crust and sop up the last of the sausage gravy. Next door, you can pick out a Bible in purple leather for Aunt Gladys from Jane R.'s Gospel Gift Shop. The welcome sign assures you that salvation is all you need at the Mechanicsburg Church of God, whose fallen parishioners lie a few steps from the door with all the time in the world. David Lee Garrison, Route 4, from the collection Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio. This collection, Every River on Earth, writing from Appalachian, Ohio, has some lovely poems in it and some wonderful prose pieces. Most of the prose pieces are a little too long to share with you on the air, but I can read you an excerpt. And one I really liked was by Christina Jones. She is an MA candidate at OU in Athens, studying English and creative fiction writing. And she received her BA from Shawnee State University in Portsmouth, where Neil Carpathios is a professor. She's got a piece in here called The Last Shot. This is Christina Jones writing. At sunrise on the southern Ohio riverbank, you can watch spirits dance off the water. Some think the fog is merely there because it's morning. But Keith Sanders went there because he believed it's where the ghosts of men without jobs hovered, trying to figure out how to support their families. He'd brought a newspaper to sit on so the seat of his pants wouldn't be wet from the morning dew still on the grass. His wife had ironed his periwinkle blue work shirt the night before, the one that proudly displayed his name in a white rectangle on his chest. His red and white igloo lunch cooler was full of turkey sandwiches and a love note from his 6-year-old daughter, Lily. His tan leather steel-toed boots were worn to the last of their soles. After 15 years at the bottling factory, he was told he was no longer needed. He hadn't had the heart to tell his wife yet, so he set the alarm for his usual time and went to the riverbank to think. He sat on the riverbank silently, waiting for the sky to lift and reveal cirrus-shaded clouds. Soon the hills became visible, and thousands of trees stood like guards surrounding the water, making sure the prisoners never escaped. His palms pressed to his forehead, he fought to hear his dead father's voice. He wanted an answer as to what he was supposed to do. There were men all over the country that had been waiting for years for something decent and were still pushing a broom and scrubbing toilets on night shift at local restaurants. The only other option he could think of was to partner up with his friend Jimmy and pray he didn't get caught. Jimmy had begun a homegrown business. He owned several acres behind his house in McDermott that were mainly hillside, and built a dog pen that surrounded his investment. In the hills of Appalachia, dogs were the cheapest home security a man could get. Dogs trained from puppies to protect pot were known to tear off limbs. Jimmy had made more money selling pot in 5 years than he did at the bottling plant in 10. When people asked how things were going, he would always let his wife Molly have all the credit. "She's working down at the Walmart now. Am I going to tell her she can't work?" Expletive. "Women get jobs easier than men now, so I say go on, Mama." It always seemed to get a chuckle, but everyone knew Molly's minimum wage job wasn't paying their house payment and keeping their kids in Nike shoes. It's just that no one told, because the majority of people understood. It was that or the welfare line. "Keith, when you're ready to trade your old life in for a new one, get yourself a dog and call me," he'd tell Keith. Keith had never thought about it until now. Keith hated to think about the predicament his family would be in if he got caught. He couldn't afford to go to jail and have charges permanently on his record. He'd never get hired again once the economy picked back up. But he also couldn't spend one more night watching his wife and daughter suffer through yet another version of Hamburger Helper and Kool-Aid. They didn't mind waiting on payday, but payday wasn't going to come this time. Keith got up and patted out the wrinkles in his clothes. He folded the newspaper and put it in his back pocket, then picked up his lunchbox. With one glance at the very river that had shipped so many dreams away, he hung his head and begged, "Please, someone, tell me what to do." On his way back up the muddy bank, Keith noticed a woman who had not been on the corner of the bridge before daybreak. The corner of the bridge linking Ohio and Kentucky was the local hotspot for beggars and peddlers. It had more traffic than most of the corners in the city. There was always someone there, and the only thing that changed was what they were trying to give away or asking for. The day before yesterday, it was a man with a homemade guitar and a veteran jacket singing "Freebird" and asking for cigarettes. This woman appeared at first to be a beggar holding a sign asking for money. But the closer Keith got, he saw the brown cardboard sign read, "Free Puppies," in red marker. The woman wore a faded denim shirt that was easily three sizes too big. She had stringy black and silver hair that floated past her shoulders, and next to her feet were three fuzzy brown puppies, all tangled up in laundry line rope. The woman smiled at Keith, inviting him to come and look. The dogs were calm and sleeping on the ground between the woman's feet until he began to speak. "What kind of dogs are these, ma'am?" he asked. Just as he spoke, one of the puppies woke and began barking and pulling at the line, waking the others. "I'm afraid they're a mix of just about everything, but they're going to make good watchdogs. You can't hardly get past that little fat one right there. We call him Bear." The woman pointed at the dog that had barked at Keith and bent down to pick him up. "He's good with young'uns, too, like to play fetch." He stared at the dog with deep brown eyes and hesitated, making a decision. Regardless of whether he wanted to or not, he had to go home with a way to make things better, he thought. "All right, then, I guess I'll take him home," Keith said. The woman untied the laundry line from Bear's collar and handed him to Keith. Keith held the puppy under his right arm and listened to it grunt every time he took a step.
"Damn, let's hope you don't eat pot, dog, because it looks like you eat everything else."
Keith put the dog up in the truck seat and called Jimmy. It rang twice before Jimmy picked up.
"What's up, buddy?" Jimmy asked excitedly. "I got a dog," Keith replied.
The rest of the conversation went just as he assumed it would. Jimmy told him to stop by on the way home. Keith hid the plants in a black garbage bag behind the seat of the truck. He instantly spotted every highway patrolman and deputy on his way home. His temperature would rise and he'd begin to sweat at the thought of an officer pulling up behind him. One sheriff did pull behind him, and the 30 seconds it took to find a driveway to pull off on felt like an hour. His hands shook, and he repeatedly peered through the rearview mirror. Bear caught on to the tension
and bark loud enough to rattle windows and turn Keith's eardrums into hollow tunnels. He turned in circles in the seat and jumped up and down. Finally, Keith pulled over. The dog kept barking. "Shut up, dog!" Keith yelled and smacked the dog on its head. He sat in his pickup truck in a stranger's driveway until he could regain composure, taking deep breaths and resting his head on the seat while watching the dog hunker on the floorboard. When an older lady came out the door of the house, he put the truck in reverse and started off again. That is the first half of this prose piece by Christina Jones called The Last Shot. There are some wonderful things in this collection, Every River on Earth, edited by Neil Carpathios. And as I mentioned during the interview, there is an event at the Dayton Metro Library, the main branch, Sunday, April 19th at 2 o'clock, open to the public. Many of the writers who contributed to Every River on Earth will be there. And you can meet them and hear them read from this collection. For information, 463-2665. That's Sunday, April 19th at 2 o'clock at the Dayton Metro Library. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening.